TD Sports and Weather. First of all, the NBA, the Bucks were off last night. The Bulls lost to Philadelphia, 115-101. Both teams are off tonight. NHL, Blackhawks lose to Toronto 3-2 in overtime last night. And in college basketball, Marquette loses to number 8 Xavier, 89-70. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for this Thursday, January 25th already. Should be sunny and pleasant today, a high heading 439. Overnight, clear and mild, a low of 32. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny, windy and mild. Tomorrow's high, 47, with winds up to 35 miles per hour. And a quick check on the weekend, Saturday, sunny and 45. Sunday, partly sunny and 32. This morning, the sun is shining, the sky is blue, 25 degrees, Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, and Milwaukee. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. Don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Jack and Drea, 2401 60th Street, online at jackandrea.com. The Morning Show is up next.
And on this portion of WGTD's Morning Show, first of all, I'm delighted to welcome back into our studios Nan Calvert, who joins us once a month with programs that are designed to get us thinking about the natural world, the environment around us, and what we can do to help safeguard the well-being of the environment in which we live. And she always has interesting guests to fold into the experience, and such is certainly the case today with the executive director of the Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association, Mr. James Vandenbroek. And we're speaking with him via telephone today. And Mr. Vandenbroek, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, great to be with you.
So, Nan, have the two of you ever met, or are you meeting him even as we speak now on the phone?
We are meeting as we speak on the phone. It's very exciting.
Right. But tell me, I suspect you certainly knew something about Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association ahead of this.
Well, embarrassingly, I would admit that I knew very little about it until I got a blurb about the upcoming conference in March, which sounds really good. And so I immediately went to the website and started reading, and I thought, well, I think that we need to have Mr. Vandenbroek on the radio to let people know what's going on with Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation. They've been around for a while, and so here we are.
Well, let's get to know one another then, so I'm glad we can do this. So, Mr. Vandenbroek, let's begin in the most basic sort of fashion. Explain who and what Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association is or are.
Okay. Well, first off, we'll just refer to us as Wisconsin Land and Water, just to keep it a little simpler.
Okay.
But what we are is a conservation nonprofit, a statewide one, but one that's going to be celebrating its 65th year of existence. And we represent all 72 county land conservation offices and their county board supervisors. So it's a statewide organization, been around doing soil and water conservation work directly with landowners and farmers to try to reduce soil erosion and try to keep water quality protected. And so it's an ongoing mission, and we've been successful in many ways, but there are many challenges.
So this is mostly an organization that wants to help people treat the land better. Is that, would that be a fair way to frame it?
Absolutely. Nothing gets done unless Wisconsin residents really want to see it get done. And so we can provide the technical assistance and sometimes financial assistance to get work done. You know, in the case of working with farmers, there's cost sharing to do practices that reduce agricultural runoff to lakes and streams, minimize groundwater contamination. But we also work with lakeshore owners to maintain water quality in lakes. We work with folks on aquatic invasive species, terrestrial invasive species. So wide range of conservation issues. Some of it relates also to farmland preservation, try to maintain our agricultural base. And by doing that, that's also a conservation measure.
So, Nan, this folds beautifully into some of the issues that have been most important to you over the years.
Yes, it certainly does. And when Jim mentioned farmland preservation, it made me remember listening to a really wonderful speaker from the town of Dunn in Dane County many, many years ago talking about farmland conservation. And I'm wondering if Wisconsin Land and Water might have been involved with that. This was many years ago, so I don't know if you were with Wisconsin Land and Water at that time.
I wasn't with Wisconsin Land and Water then, but I have been involved with Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and that's where the Farmland Preservation Program really originated. And it's implemented by county land conservation offices. So that's my connection to them now. So I was involved with the program at the state level, and then now with it at the county level, actually implementing the program. So I've been involved with it for a long time, and the program has had its ebbs and flows. But I think especially in the more what are considered urban counties, where you have the encroachment of urban areas on farmland, that's where it's the most effective, where you can try to minimize the breakup of big tracts of agricultural land.
So there's a couple of things that we're talking about here. One of them is trying to hold the land, in a sense, clear. And then the other part of it is to make sure that the land we have is also treated well or not misused in a way that damages it and causes other environmental damage. Am I summarizing that pretty well?
Well, you summarized it very well, better than I usually do. That's very true. And there's a requirement, not only if you're involved in the farmland preservation program and you get up, there's a real estate tax reduction for doing that. When you participate in that program, you agree to hold your land in agriculture, but you also have to meet certain requirements, performance standards that minimize runoff and soil erosion. So, yeah, it's two benefits in one program.
One of the things that intrigues me is that we're talking about a complicated state in which there are certain places, and of course I'm thinking particularly up to the north, where the issue of urban encroachment on farmland is, I should think, essentially not an issue whatsoever, and then other places in the state where urban sprawl and encroachment is an urgent issue. That must make the work that you do, in a sense, kind of complicated as well, because we're talking about very different regions of the state, each dealing with very different issues, in a sense.
Right, and you're right. I mean, we are blessed, really, with an amazingly diverse state, you know, in its land forms and land use, which is, I think, has many benefits for us. But it does make programming a little challenging sometimes. But it is kind of amazing, even in areas that you wouldn't suspect would have significant urban pressure. There are pressures to convert land to other uses. And so it does have an impact even in, our less urbanizing areas. And, again, because there's a requirement to do good conservation work on land that's enrolled in the program, you still get that benefit wherever the program is implemented.
Mm. So how do you work towards that goal of trying to, in a sense, preserve farmland? What are some of the most effective means by which you attempt to do that?
Well, the program is a state program, but it's implemented at the local level by counties, and the counties can adopt zoning requirements, which allow farmers to participate in the program, but then agree to maintain these large tracts of land. And it's really through that kind of zoning that the program is most effective, because you actually have a systematic way of looking at the landscape and saying, look, here, this is these are the areas that really need to be preserved, and you do that through the local zoning process, which requires lots of input from the farmers themselves, other landowners, to agree on the areas that need to be preserved. So it's a very interactive local process, and where that zoning is implemented, really see some remarkably different views of the landscape. There are situations where we've got counties that have farmland preservation zoning, and you'll see large, undeveloped tracts of land, and immediately across the county line, where you have a county that doesn't have it, you'll see homes sprinkled all over the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of fractures that system. So it doesn't have to be necessarily the urban fringe reaching out. It can just be rural development that occurs in a haphazard fashion, and that can break farms up.
Right. So what counties, how many counties are we talking about where this program is in place?
It's in place, and it's actually available to all counties, and probably 65 counties have some form of the program. There's a zoning component, and then there's another component where agricultural enterprise areas can be designated, and participation can happen within most. Those are rather large areas. So most counties are involved in the program, some more than others, but it's a widespread program, and over a third of Wisconsin farmers are participants in the program. So it's a significant program.
Wow. So I was about to ask to what extent you feel like it has been a success or has achieved what it was intended to achieve. It sounds like, at least to some extent, it has been a gratifying success. Can you kind of try to quantify that for us?
Yeah, I think that it certainly has been a success in certain areas where there's been a local will to try to preserve farmland. There's no question it's been effective in those areas. And again, that's a reflection of the local will to maintain farmland. And the other area where I think it has been very successful is in the conservation requirement for those participants. We have a specific practice that I think has been very effective in maintaining surface water quality and groundwater quality, and that's nutrient management planning and implementation. This is where farmers are meeting certain requirements to not apply too much fertilizer, not too much manure, to manage it, to manage the runoff from their land. And that's been highly successful. And I think that's probably done some of the most good of any program in the state related to water quality.
Jim, I'm curious, does Wisconsin Land and Water approach farmers, or how do you get involved with a particular farmer or in a particular county?
Well, it's really, I think, comes back to the mission of our association, which is that we advocate for locally led conservation. So the state association that I represent, I'm just the carnival barker in this whole show. I represent the local conservationists, the county conservationists that work directly with farmers. So our folks will, call folks. They'll have meetings to bring farmers in, describe programs, and so it's direct one-on-one connection with farmers and other landowners. It could be a lakeshore owner. To resolve specific resource problems that they might have.
Okay, thanks. And then also I wanted to find out, so you operate, you have the capacity to operate in all 72 counties. So do you have staff representatives for each county? Are they on site in each county, or how does that work?
They're all 72 counties are outfitted with a conservation office. Now, they might be called different things in different counties, but we do have a presence in every county. Some have as many as 12 staff. Some have, much smaller staff sizes.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a presence in every county, and we are also connected very directly. I mean, a lot of stuff gets done via partnership. We have very close relationships at the local level with local UW Extension folks, many of whom are involved with agriculture and resource protection. And we are also involved with our federal partners, USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, which has a presence in most counties. So a lot of this is done by a partnership, but we have a presence in every county.
Do you also work with local organizations such as the other water conservation groups like Root Pike Watershed Initiative, River Alliance, Waterkeepers, and those kinds of people?
Absolutely, and the connections we make are both at the local level, so local county land conservation offices make those local connections, and often it's with various land trusts or with a specific watershed project that might be sponsored by River Alliance or Nature Conservancy or you name the group. That's one of the, the genius behind the program when it was designed 65 years ago was that you would have local county officials that would be able to work with the people they know the best and be able to deliver programs and create local solutions. And a lot of that comes from local folks. And there is sort of a new program that's developing, farmer-led initiatives. And this is where farmers in relatively small watersheds take it upon themselves to do conservation work. And then they reach out to all these partners, too. And we're a sort of a catalyst at the local level to make that happen. So not only can we work directly, but we can work in cooperation with all the local ones. And then at the state level, I do a lot of the work with the state conservation groups, which could be Nature Conservancy, River Alliance, Clean Wisconsin, all of the state-level groups to work largely in advocating for good legislation. And we also weigh in when we think there's legislation that's not so good.
Those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with James Vandenbroek, He is executive director of Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association, or Wisconsin Land and Water for short. And he's here at the invitation of our good friend Nan Calvert, paying her monthly visit to the program. So we are talking about what Wisconsin Land and Water is all about, and the kind of work that they do, and how they do it. Let's talk for a moment, Mr. Vandenbroek, about the kind of mistakes that can be made in the way that land is handled, and the kind of concerns that your organization attempts to most directly address, especially in terms of helping people who own land understand how best to preserve their land. What are the most serious mistakes that have been and continue to be made?
Well, back when our organization was founded 65 years ago, the biggest issue was soil erosion. We had just come out of the Depression and the Dust Bowl, which very graphically showed that we could lose soil in lots of ways. We could lose it through these enormous dust storms in the plains. But in Wisconsin, it was water erosion that was the big problem, although we did have significant wind erosion in the Central Sands area of the state. So that was sort of the genesis of the organization. We were literally losing farmland. It was washing away, and it was filling in streams. It was filling in lakes, having lots of other attendant resource problems besides just the fact that we're losing the most productive part of our farmland, topsoil. So that was the genesis of the program. That continues. It's amazing. It still continues to be a very, very significant problem, because if you have excessive soil erosion, you're going to take not just the soil with it, but you're going to take the nutrients that were applied. And in Wisconsin, one of our biggest problems is phosphorus pollution in surface waters. That's what creates the algae blooms that we see in our lakes. It has created a dead zone in the Bay of Green Bay. We think about the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico and the impacts that has on waters of the Gulf. Well, we have our own little inland Gulf, Green Bay, and that's affected. It's essentially the same process where oxygen is depleted in the Bay of Green Bay, and it's created dead areas. Aquatic life can't live there. So we have our own sort of homegrown problem. And in southeast Wisconsin, we certainly have had problems. You know, the Milwaukee River, it's a quite large basin, multiple counties, and where it discharges into Lake Michigan, we've got water quality problems, and that can affect the water quality that is the drinking water source for Milwaukee. So there are significant water issues that we have that are a result of land use practices that need to be better. I think we know the ways to do that. It's just getting that bulk of agriculture on board to make this happen, and that's really our mission, is to work with agriculture and other land users to adopt the practices that we know work, and we're pretty confident we'll be able to get on top of the problem.
You know, having had some experience with land trust organizations, I know that it's often very difficult to get farmers on board with any sort of a program. Farmers are very independent people, and they have a very strong view of their land and their relationship to it. And often, especially older farmers, have a distrust of any organization that they associate with the government. And so it's oftentimes very, very difficult to help them understand why land preservation and land conservation practices are essential. And I'm wondering how it is that you do that. How have you been so successful working with farmers of all ages?
Well, I mean, I think that you're right. There is general with distrust, and maybe it's a sign of our times. You know, the government has a credibility issue sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, county land conservation offices are very close to home. Most of these farmers are, you know, they often are county board members themselves. They're embedded within, you know, the Wisconsin's local government. And so I think that that takes a little bit of the edge off. I mean, when you're working with our county conservation staff or their supervisors, you're working basically with your neighbors, and I think that helps. The other thing that I think helps is that we've recognized that this is an issue, and that farmers need to be convinced that if they're going to change practices, that it's going to work on their operation. That's a critical thing. You can't expect somebody to say, "Oh, well, yeah, well, I trust this idea that you have, you know, to change the way I'm farming, and that it won't have an effect on, you know, the bottom line." And let's face it, right now, especially, these are tough times for farmers. We're losing farms at continuing and pretty rapid rate. And a lot of it's because commodity prices are low. You know, milk prices are not what they used to be, and they oscillate pretty dramatically, which is difficult. So there are reasons why there's resistance and reluctance sometimes, not all the time. But one thing that we've done recently is we've been developing, and this is in collaboration with both the State Department of Agriculture, but also with DNR, to develop farmer-led watershed projects. And basically, you've got farmer leaders who know that they need to be doing something, that water quality is an important issue, they need to be involved, and basically they set up a group that they work to expand, and many of these have been very successful. So it's farmer-on-farmer interaction with assistance from local land conservation and other partner groups, you know, to help them have the meetings and so on. But these have been very successful. And I have to say, I think this is true throughout agriculture. Agriculture understands, you know, in Wisconsin, but also nationally, that they have, at a minimum, an image problem where, let's face it, the consumers and, you know, if you think about Southeast Wisconsin, you've got a lot of consumers there. They live in the city, and they're trying to get more in touch with where their food comes from. And farmers know that, and they're trying to make a better connection with their consumers, which I think is a very good thing. And I think the more that all farmers in Wisconsin come to that realization that having a good relationship with your consumer is vital to the industry. And so we're seeing a lot of the mainline agricultural groups want to be engaged in coming up with solutions. And that's part of an initiative we put forth 2 years ago. We call it Food, Land, and Water. It makes that connection between where the food comes from and the impact on land and water resources. And once you make that connection, you can start to move towards good practices, because it makes sense for the producer to have consumers that want their product.
One question I have is the reality, and we've already touched on it, I think, a bit, the fact that some farmland is farmed by farmers in more of the sort of traditional sense of the word, the family farmer. The farmer who maybe has land that has been in his family for generations and so on, and that's one situation. But then we also, of course, have this situation of, I don't know what we want to call it, sort of industrial farming or big farm, but where those that actually own the land and probably make many of the decisions about how that land is used are more sort of corporate entities, maybe not even on site. I don't even know to what extent that is how much that is a part of the equation in Wisconsin. It's certainly a huge part of the equation in other parts of the country for sure. But what kind of challenge does it pose for an organization like yours to try to make a difference in those kind of situations where we're not talking about relatively small family farms, for instance?
Well, there's absolutely no question that Wisconsin, like every other state, has seen the size of its farms grow very dramatically. And because we're a dairy state, the dairy state, you might say, that's been most apparent on dairy farms, where we see farms now that might have, and some of our largest farms have, 8,000 cows on them. And given the fact that the average size farm is about 175 cows, there's this huge difference between what the middle is and what the top end is. I mean, there are huge farms, and those very large farms, there are about 300 of them out of, we have about 9,000 dairy farms in the state, 300 of which are these concentrated animal feeding operations, that's what they're called, that are over, say, 700 cows. That's about what you need to kind of break that line. And at that point, you have to be permitted by DNR. And it's required that you have a nutrient management plan and other practices. And so in some ways, there are some more requirements that are required of these large farms for environmental protection. But the challenge that you have with these very large farms is that because of their size, they have to have, we're talking dairy now, storage for a lot of liquid manure to try to keep it from being spread during risky times of year, which is like the winter time, or in early spring when we have a significant runoff. That's when you want to not be putting manure out on the landscape. And the challenge that very large farms have is because they have such huge quantities, it can make it very difficult for them to avoid those risky times. So they have their challenges. They are somewhat more regulated, but they really do need to deal with risks at a much higher level than a much smaller farm. So there are those challenges. They can be addressed, but as you know, this change occurs, what we're seeing is a lot of the middle-sized farms are being squeezed out, and they either have to sell to, you know, sell out, and that is what's happening. We're seeing a lot of retirement because many dairy farmers are getting towards retirement. The average age is about 57 years old for dairy farmers in Wisconsin. So many are nearing retirement, and they might not have family members who want to take over, and that's how a lot of these very large farms have gotten big. The land is either sold or rented to very large dairy farms. But on the other end of it, a lot of farms have gone towards the organic or specialty production and maintained the size of their farm at, you know, relatively modest size. But because of the value-added product, either organic or some other specialty product, they are able to remain competitive. And so I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a push towards either very large or relatively small size farms. And we can work well with both, but the challenges are different.
We're speaking with James Vandenbroek, Executive Director, Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association, or Wisconsin Land and Water for short. We have spent most of our time talking about agricultural land, rural land. Can you give us a sense of to what extent your organization concerns itself with land that has absolutely nothing to do with agriculture? Or at least that's actually probably a misstatement. I have a feeling all land has something to do with everything else, but at least in a direct fashion, and particularly land that we would consider either urban or sort of semi-urban. Is that a little more outside the primary focus of your organization?
Well, actually, many of our urban counties deal pretty directly with stormwater runoff. So that's clearly not agricultural. It's the water that's running off of parking lots and other surfaces that, where water can't infiltrate. How do you manage that? So that's a significant component of many of our more urban counties, and that's a very big issue. Think about the work that's going on in Milwaukee County, which is essentially Milwaukee, almost entirely urban county. A lot of the issues that they have related to water quality is dealing with stormwater. So how do you get water to infiltrate? How do you keep it from running off in huge volumes, and how do you treat it? And that's something that our folks locally work on. And then broadly throughout the state, and this is essentially a non-agricultural issue, aquatic invasive species. Most counties have a program where they're providing resources to deal with invasive species that are really a major problem in Wisconsin's lakes. And it's a very big program in northern Wisconsin, but we have plenty of lakes in southern Wisconsin, and they have similar problems. That's an area where we're involved. And again, because we're able, individual counties are able to tailor their programs to deal with issues that are a big deal for them. I'm sure your listenership is familiar with the fracking industry. It's where a chunk of our natural gas comes from and other oil resources. And the sand that's used for fracking comes from, a lot of it comes from western Wisconsin. And the mining of that sand, ultimately creates an issue of how do you reclaim those lands so that it's not a problem. We don't have erosion problems. We don't have other water quality problems when those lands are restored. Many of our counties have been involved in dealing with zoning issues so that they can try to address those problems. So we deal with a wide range of issues all over the state. But in urban areas, we're engaged there too.
Of course, in this neck of the woods, the biggest story of all at the moment is that of the emergence of Foxconn and this gigantic facility, which will soon be under construction. So what does an organization like yours have to do with a project like that when that big an industry comes to the area in terms of the issues with which you are most concerned?
Well, I think that there are a couple of ways. I think that there are things that, local land conservation can do to make sure that the local zoning that's on the books is followed. And they're certainly attempting to do that. Now, of course, you're well aware that there have been specific modifications to state law to try to obviate the need for some of the wetlands protections and so on. That was something that the state association, so the work that I do, I'm actually a lobbyist, so I lobby on behalf of conservation issues at the state capitol, that we weighed in on. So we can deal with things that sometimes are beyond the locals to control, where there's legislation that's occurring at the state level. So I'm able to weigh in at the state level on issues. Local land conservation offices can deal with the local zoning authorities that they have. So we do have this ability to deal with some I'll be frank about this. That project had a lot of energy behind it, and it was not going to be thwarted by the inconvenience of certain environmental requirements, unfortunately. And I think that's something that's a clear challenge that we as a state need to step up on. Hmm. When there are these huge economic opportunities that occur, that we at least do the best we can to protect land and water resources. Because frankly, once wetlands are in this case, that's one of the big issues. Once they're gone, they're really gone. It's very difficult to restore them and restore their function. And the wetlands are critical pieces of our natural resource infrastructure. And that's where we get clean groundwater from. They have perform lots of functions to improve water quality. And even if they're small ones, they produce a lot of habitat. They produce lots of eco benefits that are gone once they're paved over. And by just putting in replacement wetlands, which is a requirement of the law, in some other place, it doesn't deal with the function of those wetlands in the place that they were. So I think we really do need to act as a state and step up more. And frankly, Wisconsin citizens need to become more aware of the importance of environmental protection when these large projects go in. I think things can be accommodated. It may take a little bit of time, but I think that many of these corporations want to be good land stewards, and we should work with them to bring that out. I don't think we need to give them things that they didn't even ask for just because we think they might need it. I think in many cases, we've got good corporate stewards that are willing to take the steps they need to protect the environment.
Is the loss of wetlands what you are environmentally most concerned about when it comes to Foxconn?
I think that's one of the bigger issues that I see there. I don't know all of the issues. I think that clearly that's a big site, and there's going to be loss of farmland, and not that we can prevent the loss of farmland in every case. That's just not possible. I think you have to do it in a smart way, and that was what part of the smart growth legislation that we had years ago attempted to do, was to try to take a look at, okay, we know we're going to have development, we need it. How do we do it in the best way with the least impact on the environment? And I think that's just smart approach to any kind of development, and it's smart for the state. And I think that's Wisconsin has a remarkable conservation legacy. We've got some of the greatest lights in American conservation, came from Wisconsin. John Muir grew up here, and Governor Nelson, created the conservation movement. Elder Leopold, lived here. So we have that, I think, in our bones. I think it's reasonable to expect that folks that want to develop here respect.
Before we let you go, I want you to talk about the big event that is coming up for your organization in March.
Right. So it's our 65th annual conference, Wisconsin Land and Water. We get conservationists together from all over the state. And it's not just local land conservationists. Conservationists from the other agencies, and we welcome anyone who has an interest in land and water resources to come and hear what are the big issues in the state and how are we going to address them. And we've talked about a number of them here today. We'll be talking about those and many others, and really getting down into the weeds about how you you actually address these problems. We have we talked about it earlier, these big changes in agriculture. We see that. We see development changes. It's an ongoing challenge. I often say that conservation doesn't have a finish line. It's we're always going to have to be working at it because changes to the environment, whether it's climate change or, we have development changes or other changes in agriculture, those are going to be ongoing. And so our annual conference is to kind of look at where are we and how can we address the biggest problems in front of us. And it's also kind of a way to recharge your conservation batteries a little bit because it's not all gloom and doom. I think we've got good people and I do believe, again, that Wisconsin citizens have it in their bones to do the right thing and to try to maintain what is a remarkable state. We have what many, many states are dying to have, and that's good, clean water. And we have to do our best to protect it. And so we will celebrate it. And we'll lay out a blueprint for where we go.
James Vandenbroek is Executive Director of Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association. You can get more information about their organization and about this upcoming conference at their website, wisconsinlandwater.org. And there's a lot of interesting things on this website, including, for instance, right on the front page in their County Conservation Spotlight, a wonderful little story about, for instance, a family farmer close to Germantown and talking about some of the specific things that he has done on his farm to better preserve the land and the water. It makes for great reading. There's lots of other interesting things on this website as well, wisconsinlandwater.org. And James Vandenbroek, we really appreciate you joining us today on The Morning Show. Very best wishes to you and everyone with Wisconsin Land and Water.
Greg and Anna, a real pleasure, and really glad to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Okay, Nan, in our last couple of minutes, you want to share with us anything that's coming up?
I do. I have a few important things. The first one is a heads up to all of us environmental educators, whether you are a staff person or a volunteer person. Over two weekends, January 20th, 21st, and then February 3rd and 4th, Riverbend Nature Center will be hosting a Certified Interpreter Guide workshop. This is a National Association of Interpretation course, and it's the only one that will be in Wisconsin for 2018. To register, go to the NAI website, and registration is required. I'm assuming you can also call Riverbend Nature Center for more information. Next, we have the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. They're having a wheat-free breads workshop on Thursday, January 25th from 10 a.m. until noon. Sean Radisky of Waterhouse Foods will be the guide. This is a hands-on class for those interested in learning how to bake bread without gluten, both with and without yeast, and how to tailor the flavor and texture of the bread to your taste. This workshop is not at the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center, however. It's at the Sealed Air YMCA, and the fee is $35. Call the Eco Justice Center for more information. And lastly, attention woodland owners. The 2018 Southeast Wisconsin Woodland Owners Conference will be held on February 3rd at the Waukesha Community Technical College. To register, go to the WWOA website and download a brochure. And that's it.
Very good. Nan Calvert, thank you so much for helping to arrange today's program, and we'll see you in February.
Yes, it's always my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And tomorrow on the morning show, I'll be speaking with the author of Your Score, which explains how your credit score is put together and some things that you can do to safeguard your credit score. We'll also talk to the author of